If you are going through a career crisis right now and you are feeling stuck and you don't know what to do, well, hold on to your seat if you're driving. We are going to get into it today. You might not even call it a crisis. You might call it a career crossroads where you're at a decision-making point and you don't know what to do. You might feel stuck and you're just not sure how to get unstuck. Well, I am joined by Glenn James, the founder of This Is Money and all the podcasts in this group. And we're talking about how you can solve your career problems. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Shell, I'm so excited to talk about this stuff because the number one asset that you have in your financial life is your ability to earn income and your career. Your career, your job, what you do is what funds everything in your life. So I've cleared my calendar this afternoon, Shell, and I want this conversation to be a thought starter for everyone, and we'll just take it wherever it needs to go. But yeah, I'm so pumped to be on This Is Work with you.
All right, let's get into it. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Glenn, I've brought you onto this podcast specifically because you're good with a crisis.
Shell, my life is a crisis, and part of my life is my career or lack of career, but I have navigated many a crisis in my work life, my career life, my personal life.
And so, hence you're here. I thought, who do I call? I call you, Glenn James. And also, we've written a book on this.
We did. Literally, it's more of a memoir of my and your career successes, implosions, and some stories along the way.
I think I'm hearing from a lot of people at the moment, Glenn, who are feeling a bit stuck in their career. So maybe they have finished uni, gone to their career, spent 3 or 4 years doing the thing that they thought that they wanted to do, and they get in there and they're like, not sure if this is really for me. So then they start wondering, okay, well, maybe teaching or nursing or being an accountant wasn't the right career for me, but what do I do? Because I've invested all this money, all this time, all this energy into this thing, and then now I don't know if I can trust my own judgment to get into a new career or start studying again. So this is something I think most people will have to navigate at some point where they feel like they get stuck and they need to figure out a way to get unstuck. We're going to talk today about strategies, super practical ways that you can get unstuck. We've got a fair few steps we're going to take you through. But Glenn, I don't know if you'd like to share maybe a story that you've found of like, how do you get unstuck when you hit this type of career crisis?
Yeah, so I think, look, there's a lot to unpack with this topic and the episode. And even what you just said, like, I think in this day and age, you need to say out loud, nothing is forever. And that includes your career. 50% chance it will be your marriage as well. So, like, it's
just something to look forward to.
It's just, yeah, like, I don't know. Well, you just got to look at the stats, right? And stats don't care about how you feel. It's like, well, this is the black and white. People change jobs lots. People get divorced. People separate. People have kids. Like, so life happens. So, and very, very interesting, Shell, that you've got me on today because I've had a really annoying day. So you asked for this and with a 5 minutes notice.
And you will deliver.
And I will deliver. So my own crisis, I think you have to first do a bit of an autopsy, even when times are good, on your own personality, how you respond to situations. at the risk of TMI, I'm doing some schema therapy. I've been going through some stuff lately that you know about, which we won't say publicly, but you know, I'm looking at the different schemas at which I operate, which is from childhood. And that's a healthy thing to do anyway, because however you function or operate, it's really healthy to know, because you'll respond different ways, okay? So it's good to do this stuff while you're not in career crisis, when there is business as usual. Like, how do I function as a person? Because when the pinch comes with your life and career, you really need to be rock solid on, best case, knowing who you are as a person, how you react to things. And part of, like, the, you mentioned the career book that we wrote, Sort Your Career Out and Get Invested. What's it called? Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money, whatever it is.
Yeah, that one.
Like, we did a whole chapter on risk. So there's this underlying theme in work and in life that things are always going to change, and there needs to be an element of healthy risks and understanding risks. And if you're scared about taking risks, well, get this, the risk is in the actual execution. So you can lower that execution risk by doing lots of preparation and getting as much info and dispelling the unknowns as much as possible before you do that. So that's a bit of an opening comments on the way I see life, work, career, all that stuff at the moment. It's an uncertain world that we live in, and there's always going to need to be change. So we need to be match fit.
To your point on the risk stuff, Glenn, when you say we need to kind of build our tolerance to risk, it's really interesting, because if I think about career crises and where people are at right now, if you're listening and you're like, I'm stuck, one of the things that happens when you get stuck in your career and stuck in a work environment, you're actually taking a risk by doing nothing. Like, doing nothing in and of itself is a risk, and it's probably one of the most challenging risk spots to be in, because you're like, I'm making a decision. And a lot of the time when I'm talking to people, they might stay in, let's say they're in a toxic work environment, or let's say they're in a job and they just, it's not aligned to their strengths. And so they're just miserable, and they're maybe doing like mediocre or less than mediocre performance because they don't like it. It's not aligned with their strengths. And so they're taking a risk doing that. And that's where I think if we look at this idea of risk taking, when we're stuck, and I say this with full empathy, because I had a really stuck moment a few years back where I'd made a couple of really silly calls in my working life, ended up in an environment that wasn't right for me. And I just like felt trapped. I'm like, it wasn't until I went and had some really healthy conversation with a few people who were really just spoke wisdom at that point in my life, where they're like, hey, like, yeah, you're stuck, but you're also choosing to be there. Like, you could leave. And I remember that's a big risk, but I was like, but it's a risk to stay, to your health, to your well-being, to your family situation, to your salary, to all these things. So I was like, okay, so I am making a risk decision, but sometimes it's like the devil we know kind of idea of like, well, I'll just stick it out, because the fear gets into, and I want to say this with empathy, because it's a really challenging spot to be in, but at the end of the day, we're still making a risk decision, and we're still taking that risk when we just choose to stick at something that isn't right for us. So I want to hear from you, because you've had an interesting journey. You've had multiple career crises. I'd love for you to talk to us about what you've learned from it.
Yeah. And thanks for everything you said then, because it's so true about the risk of inaction. You know, I come from a money world, and people are like, well, I would rather just keep my cash in a bank account. I don't need it for 5-6 years. I want it to be safe. Well, there is probably more of a risk of doing nothing when it comes to investing. But just before I get to, I think, my first story in career crisis, for those who have a copy of the book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money, I want you to write down or memorize page 143. And this is a diagram that I put together, and I called it my career risk spectrum. And effectively, everyone picture there's an XY chart, and at the top right is most risky but also most rewarding, okay? So we know the higher the risk, the higher the chance of reward, right? But a lot of people don't think about it this way as well. The higher the risk, the higher the chance of something not happening as well. Like, the chance of a reward is high, but the chance of failure is very high. And at the very extreme part of that in terms of career risks, we've got quitting your job with no job lined up and probably no money in the bank and just, I'm out of there. That's pretty extreme. The one just down from that could be starting a business. We go down, it could be an industry change or then a commission-only sales role. But at the very bottom, I want to talk about these things that they're usually, and again, that's why I said page 143, because there is the actual diagram of that. In the, you know, the low and, you know, risk muscle, the easiest to kind of work on would be speaking up if you're unsure of something, asking for time in lieu for a medical appointment, not feeling guilty for calling in sick, voicing concerns with your team. So that stuff there, they're on this risk spectrum. But you know what, Shell? These are actually just everyday confidence issues. They're not risks to, but I know that some people would feel guilty about, well, it's a risk if I call in sick. They might think this of me, but you're entitled to that. But in that middle of this spectrum, this there's a risk band, and I called it the healthy target range for your risk muscle for everyday career use, right? Applying for a role that you only meet 60% of criteria, asking for training and development, asking for a salary review. And here's another one, you know, I kind of call it how it is, not putting up with crap. And that stuff there, they're kind of the healthy range of everyday career risks that you need to get used to, because you need to happen to your career and not let your career happen to you. You are in the driver's seat of your career. So within all that, page 143, and if you don't have a copy of the book yet, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's such a great resource. When I was 25, I was onto my second career. I did telecommunications apprenticeship when I left school early. And then at age 20, I was qualified. And well, that was kind of the first risk, that I didn't want to do telecommunications and I wanted to get into finance. But when you're kind of living at home and you're 20 years old, it's like, yeah, I'll do this. So it wasn't as major. Like, I was scared about resigning, and, you know, my employer was my cousin at the time and I deeply respected and still do. And it was like, I don't want to let them down. So there was some things there. I think everything's relative, right, to your situation. But when I was commuting to Sydney from, you know, an hour and a bit away, I wanted to do financial advice. I wanted to do something in finance. I wanted to do something for myself, but I didn't know. And it was almost this existential, is that how they say it?
Existential. Existential.
Existential crisis. That's the one. Of, oh my goodness, I've got no idea what I need to do and I'm actually not good at anything. How many times have we thought that? I don't know anything. And we get stuck in our own little silos. And I had a really good mentor who basically said, well, why don't you just do what you're doing now, but do it for yourself? And I'm like, huh, I can't do that. Why not? I'm like, I don't know. And that kind of just started this. So, and I totally know the feelings of those who might have a bit of a career crossroads or a career crisis, or even career apathy and boredom. That's a good one, which we can talk about. What I would probably like resolve within all that, the older you get, the easier it hopefully becomes, because you got more life experience. But so I had to line up my ducks. I had to work about starting my own, like planning to start my own business. And it was scary, really scary. And then resigning and then going out on my own. But that kind of career crisis crunch of, I'm an authorized representative, financial advisor, I'm 25 years old, I love what I do, I feel trapped in this crisis because I just thought I couldn't get another job, what I was doing from the area that I lived, and I had to keep commuting forever more, and there was a crap salary and I wasn't heaps loving some parts of the role, and it was really, really hard. And I think looking back on it with undiagnosed mental health issues, yeah, that helps. that exacerbated a few thoughts and feelings there. So yeah, it was, I don't know, I just had to, and this is why tools like this podcast are so helpful, because back then when I had my career crisis, if I didn't have a mentor who was happy to talk life into me and encourage me, I would have been so screwed. And now you've got resources like your podcast, Shell, that people can listen to and be encouraged with their career. We've got the book, and like, we step it out. And I want everyone to know you're not alone. The feelings that you're feeling right now with your career, other people have felt them. I had to go to the doctors once. And like all of us, we're all humans, right? And the doctor was like, all right, pants down, up on the bed. I'm like, oh, but I've just got a cough. Nah, joking. But like, it was, but it was this.
Where is this going?
No, but it was just like when you're younger, it's not as hectic as you get old because you get used to it. But some heaps private stuff with the medical things, you think like you're the only one in the world who's ever had this condition. Guess what? You're not. And even I was really scared. I remember the first time I went to the GP and told him about my mental health struggles, I was like really freaking out. It's like, oh my gosh, this is wild. And you know, the stigma. And I was telling him how I felt, and he literally just like, oh, sounds like you got a bit of depression happening there. Let's have a look. And I was like, oh, what? Wasn't there like going to be a big, you know, you break the glass and hit the alarm and like, we got a live one in the room back here. Like, hey, everyone, come in. Glenn's got depression. Like, that was what I was feeling. And I say all this to say the stuff that you're going through with your career at the moment, trust me, I've been through it. Shell's been through it. Everyone has to go through this purge. We have to have our moment. We've got to do our time, get a bit qualified in something, get some practical experience. If you were stuck, here's a good one as well, Shell. If you're listening to this and you're early 20s and you're just about to complete a university degree that you now have no freaking love or passion for, and you feel like I've regretted the last 2.5-3 years of my life, finish the degree, go work at JB Hi-Fi, go work at a cafe for a couple of years. Just fine. Just eat, pray, love it. Like, it's all good. Life goes on.
I think the big struggle for a lot of people is that sunk cost fallacy. So if I've invested in, like, my sister-in-law who's come on the podcast, she did a radiation therapist degree, spent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars studying for years and years, and ended up in there and was like, this is not me. This is not my zone. And so then she went back and did nutrition and naturopathy and spent thousands and thousands of dollars more. But now she's in an area that she loves, but it was probably like a 7-year journey. And I think that's the thing. When we think about this idea of being in a career crisis, we think we need to figure it out straight away. I'm in physiotherapy. I don't like it. Oh, okay, I'm going to quit and become, tomorrow I'm going to know exactly what I want to do. It's like, no. Give yourself breathing space. Like, that is so fine. Like, take time off. And I think for you, like, you've done this journey. You've had like multiple careers, 4 careers, or you went from telecommunications into financial advice, then into running your own business, which I see as a career change again, as a financial advice firm that you created, Fortify, and then starting the podcast, This Is Money. It's been multiple stages for you of these big, massive career changes. But what people don't see is all the years of planning that's gone into it, the thought, the thinking, the mentoring, all of that stuff that happens. And when we look at people who've had career changes, we just think that they knew exactly what they wanted to do and they just like figured it out. But a lot of the time, people have to have that breathing space between. And I know for me, like I had between, I don't know, it was probably around 5 months off. And I was in a privileged spot to be able to do that. So I want to call that out. But I just knew I had to have space from the work that I was doing in order to figure out my next move. And that was so, like terrifying. Like I quit my job and was like, I think maybe I want to start my own business, but don't know. I'm going to give myself all this time and space to think about it and plan stuff out and see how I go. And I just had like had my second baby, and it was just all a bit chaotic. And I felt in that time like I just felt for the first time probably in my life, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, and it was a terrible feeling. I was just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I feel lost. And for someone who's I'm really decisive. So I was like, I really struggled with that feeling, but I'm glad I didn't rush it, because I think giving yourself the breathing space, whatever that looks like for you, it might be getting out of the job and going and working at the cafe for a while at JB or whatever it is, like you said, Glenn, you don't have to. I think it's working out how do you handle that feeling of like external pressure.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because one of the big things I was always thinking, particularly when I was changing from telecommunications to finance and then quitting my job and starting my own business, like someone I really looked up to in the industry told me to my face, you'll never be able to do it. It's too hard. That's soul crushing. And so all this external stuff, like what will people think? And this is kind of, if you are in a corporate role at the moment and you're not loving life and you need a flashpoint circuit breaker, I just need to get out of the corporate thing, I need to go and work at a cafe, I need to insert something else that's totally contrasted just to get some external perspective to look in, that's probably one of the healthiest things you'll ever do. You're going to get the outside pressure from everyone. Why are you doing that? That's a bad thing. Who cares what anyone thinks? Just, you've got to back yourself. And this all comes back to when we talk about financial literacy, and I think I even talked about it somewhere in the book, about if you're up to your eyeballs in credit card and consumer debt, if you don't have an emergency fund, if you're living week on week, guess what? The facts are this crap is harder. And we lay in the bed we make for ourselves most of the time. And if we've overspent and accrued lots of debt, well, that needs to be cleaned up. We need to get on a good sound foundation. So I don't know. I just think you're going to get a lot of external pressure if you want to shake things up in your life. But you need to make sure that you do have a good plan in place, and maybe even a plan B, plan A, B, and C. It's funny, when I started my business, and this is a lesson for anyone that I've learned, and this isn't just a business tip, it's not a work tip, it's not a career tip, not only a life tip. This is a tip for being a human. You do not make decisions out of fear. Any decision out of fear. Think about all the decisions you've ever made, and you knew at the time you were doing this out of fear. How did that work out for you? Probably not great most of the time. In fact, when I started my business, I started applying for other jobs out of fear on the side. Literally, the Bateau Bay Hotel, you know, it's dangerous in the car park at night. Like, I'm talking about the Bateau Pub, whatever it's called. I applied for dish pig positions, could not get them. I applied for all these roles. I'm like, I can go overnight and get a couple hundred dollars or whatever. It was like the universe was going, nope, you're not getting a casual job. Keep focused. You're doing that out of fear. And yeah, so that's just a bit of unsolicited advice around decisions and fear. Have a strategy with your career.
Yes, this is so, that thing of fear is so legit. And it's really funny, because when you're in that moment, if you feel like you're listening right now, you're like, this is me. I'm staying in this thing because I'm afraid of what people will think. Like one of, someone we included with their story, they wanted to remain anonymous in the book. And I think this was a really powerful example. They were a doctor, got like, obviously, like how much, Glenn, would it cost to do your medicine degree? Like,
It's not a lot. As expensive. Just call it 50 or 60 grand. I don't think it's as expensive as everyone thinks.
Okay, so let's say 50, 60 grand, but it's like all the time, like years and years of your life into that. And there's also the status associated with that as a career. Once they got in there and they were starting to like specialize and everything, they just realized, okay, this is not for me, but my family and every single person like sees me as this. My identity is connected to this and there's a lot of prestige and status and all the things. And they're like, but I'm miserable. And I think this is so funny because that you can look at that and go, well, if I allow the fear of what other people think to control my life, well, I'm just going to be miserable in this job for however long. And when we think about how much time we spend at work, like we spend more time at work than with our own families. So if you're making decisions based on the fear of what other people think, fear of what your families think or like you should be doing or whatever, rather than what you said before of Glenn, like backing yourself, you're going to end up down a path that you're like, well, it looks good to other people, but is this the path and road that I really want to travel? Because you are the driver of your own career.
I'm far from married. Apparently you are. talk to us about if you've got a spouse or partner, how you bring them on the decision. Because just, I kind of was just thinking then about, well, hang on. There is a point where if you're in a relationship, spouse, partner, to become one, married, all that stuff, like there could be a bit of drama if you're like, well, I quit and we're doing this. And so I don't know. Would you say that like any major decision in a relationship, we need not needing to be on the same page, but actually knowing what the other page, what person the other page is on and supporting them in a measured way. I don't know.
Totally. It's a collaborative decision, in my opinion, or at least for Sam and I it was. So we, if I think back to my big career crisis, Sam knows what where I was at. Like I had pretty bad anxiety at the time. I was not in a good space. And so we collaboratively worked out, okay, well, what am I doing? Why am I staying in this environment? I need to make a decision. And we looked at, okay, well, what are our options? And so I think this is the thing. Whenever you're making big choices, you don't have to just think about one option. You have options. And it goes to what you're saying, plan A, plan B, plan C. Okay, well, plan A is I move into something new straight away. Plan B is I take time off and have a think about what I want to do. And plan C is I just take the next job I can find it anywhere. And we worked out, okay, I think for us, like, we could probably, based on like having an emergency fund, having that stuff set up. He was like running his own business at the time and we could cover the bases. It was a stretch, but we were like, okay, we can do this for a period of time. And that gave me space to really decide to go all in on my business. And it meant that I wasn't making a decision out of fear. So that was a huge thing for me, navigating the fear journey. And I think if you're in a relationship, even if you're not, come up with multiple options. Like you don't, if we just think we have one option, that's when we get stuck because it's too much of a risk. But when we can actually play it out and go, all right, what are all my options? And then what I look at, Glenn, I go like, you're much more, you've got a high risk tolerance than me, which we know. I have really low risk tolerance. So I then wanted to map out, well, what's the best case scenario and the worst case scenario? And so for me, I looked at, well, if I start my own business, the worst case scenario is it fails. And the middle of the road scenario is I break even. I make the same amount as what I was making as an internal HR professional. And then the best, and I looked at them and went, okay, well, what's the likelihood? So I like fully went into the most amount of detail and then made my decision based on knowing, well, the risk likelihood is I'll probably make the same amount of money. Am I okay with that? Absolutely. Okay, well, let's go do it. And I had the stuff in the background already working with that emergency fund. Like you've so encouraged all of your listeners on This Is Money to do. Like if you don't have that stuff, go sort that. Don't think about a career change until you've got that stuff sorted, because that to me is where I think we get reckless. But you jump in with what you think about all that, Glenn.
Yeah, I'm just, for example, I think like anything, if you've got some vibe as like, I'm not happy, we need to, you know, at the risk of me insulting myself and embarrassing myself any further, We need to kind of act like a doctor. We can't treat something until we diagnose what we're treating. So like everything in life, whether it is that, oh, I think I want to go on a holiday to the Maldives. And then that kind of thought's been on your mind for 3 or 4 months. Okay, well, this wasn't a fleeting thing. It's a thing, right? Or in the workplace, you've had the odd conversation with management and they really are interested in giving you a promotion. They're really interested in giving you all money and they're really interested. They're going to get you that company car. And hang on a minute, it's been 12 months since they're talking about this. I don't think they're actually keen on this. So I think it's diagnosing. And once you are at that, I call it the aha moment. It's like, well, aha, I do actually want to go to the Maldives, or aha, I do want that Le Creuset skillet, or aha, I don't think my boss and the management team actually do want to promote me. They're just dangling a carrot. So we need to get to that point. Now, once we're at that point, I reckon it's actually working out a couple of things. I want you to triage the urgency of it, okay? So number one, is it, oh my gosh, that manager down there is toxic. They belittle everyone privately and public. This is not actually healthy for my mental health, for, like, urgent stuff. So you need to triage whether it's urgent or, I got the feeling they're not really interested in getting me any more money. So I am out of here and I'm going to look for somewhere. Or within that, is it a job issue or a career issue or both? Because I reckon the response to that question works out in so many different ways. Like if it's a job thing, or this place sucks, I'll just look for another job. Oh, wait, hang on. No, I'm not happy being a dog washer working for this dog wash company. So it's going to need, like anything, the bigger the decision, the more time that might be needed. So I like my career as a dog washer, but I want to go across town and wash different dogs for a nicer boss and get a bit more money. That could happen within a couple of weeks. But if it's a career thing, I want to get into marketing and I'm a dog washer at the moment. Okay, well, we're going to need a bit more of a plan.
I think as well, if we think about diagnosing and we go back to that example of like imagine yourself, you're a GP, you're diagnosing the problem, you have to ask yourself a lot of reflective questions. So you have to really think about, okay, what is it specifically that I don't enjoy? How long have I not enjoyed this, to your point? Because if it's, you know, day by day, if on average, work's going to be hard, like just that's the nature of work. It is going to be challenging. You're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. But it's like, are there more good days than bad on the whole? Versus if you're like, actually, you know what, for the last 4 months, I have been absolutely miserable. Then you need to drill into, you're like, well, what is it? What is the actual problem? Is it just this immediate team versus the whole company? Because maybe there's other pockets of the company that are going really like amazingly and you could get a secondment over into another area. Or is it like, you know what? And this is a big one. This is where I think a lot of career changes come into play. I think it's about, oh, you know what? My strengths don't align with the role. That's where I feel like people get the most challenges. Because, for example, if I think about all the people that I've like seen make big career moves, they've realized after a number of years, they're like, I can do this job. Like there's no problem with me doing this job, but it doesn't energize me. And usually that's linked to your strengths. So when you love what you do, you're usually using some things that you're good at. They're like maybe your superpower. So let's say one of your strengths is public speaking, but you're in a role where you are in spreadsheets all day and you don't have any real kind of communication aspects to your role. Well, then you're not going to be using your strengths. You're not going to be energized. And that's where, Glenn, I think people, when they don't know their strengths and they don't ever get the chance to kind of evaluate, well, how am I using my strengths in this role? Am I getting to use them? That's where we start to see this kind of dynamic of, okay, we've got problems now. So if you're feeling like that, go and do that kind of self-reflection to work out, okay, what is it that I don't enjoy? Ask yourself a lot of questions, get input from the people around you about what they think you're good at. And then go, okay, well, maybe I'm not using them in my role. Can I have a conversation with my boss to see if I can use them more? Because before you go and jump the gun, you might actually have opportunities internally, but we haven't actually accessed them yet.
One of my strengths, Shell, is making money. So we're going to take a break now and we're going to come back. And I've just written down some questions that I want people to ask themselves. We'll be back right after this.
If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Okay, we're back. Shell show, but I'm kind of just...
Yeah, because I always forget to ask the break and I get in trouble from the production team. They're like, remember the break.
So I think this is really good just to kind of spend some time just discussing this stuff and getting your mind ticking away. Now, I want you to ask yourself, is there a problem with your career or your job at the moment? Do you like what you do? Do you hate getting up on a Monday morning every week? So I think those kind of questions, you might like your job, you might not have any problems, but you actually dread going to work because it's like, oh, just 9 to 5, I hope I can win the lotto and stop working. Because if you've got that mindset of, I like my job, it's brain dead, I go to work and I go home, but far out, I hate working, I just want to win the lotto so I don't have to work. Do yourself a favor and maybe pick up the career book and let's rehash your career, because a lot of the time in our conversations, and particularly with this career book, it is for those that are in a crisis or want to change. But I'm just calling out that you might think it's all good, but some of the behaviors that you're thinking to yourself or your actions, like I'm out of work at 5:01 and all this stuff is like, I'm quiet quitting and stuff them. I'm like, that's not healthy for your career longer term to have that posture of I'm just a taker.
Yeah.
Sure, you might work for the local government and it's all good and you go to work, you go home. But guess what? Everyone in that workplace knows you're a scab and you do the bare minimum. And that's not a personal brand that I want myself to carry. I want to carry myself with integrity where possible. Not always possible when I'm doing a podcast. So,
but I think what we should say on that that's really important is two things. First, McCrindle in their research in their book Wellbeing, I've said this before and I'll say this till the cows come home, found that feeling a sense of growth and challenge at work is really good for your wellbeing. So their research into thousands of employees found that growth and feeling like you are challenged and you're contributing in a really meaningful way is good for your health. Number two, though, is to your point of takers, we've all worked with them. They're the most draining people to work with. No one wants to work with a taker. And people who listen to this podcast are typically like they're givers, they're high achievers. And we're thinking, you've probably got someone in your mind you're thinking of right now on your team. Let me just say this, that when we build our career, if we're generous, if we're givers, if we're the type of person to go above and beyond, our career will sort itself out for us. Like if you are someone with that mindset, you've got a growth mindset, you're always thinking about ways to help the business improve, you will have door after door after door open, because business owners, and I say this as an employer, as well as someone who's worked in HR, HR people, employers, recruiters, they're looking for people who want to grow, who want to give, who want, like that's, and so that's just something that I think we should all try to become more like. And I'm still on this journey of always trying to be like that.
I mean, the good thing is someone who, I legitimately think someone who doesn't want to lean into their work, their career, their life and be active and that are more on the taker side, bare minimum side, they're probably not listening to this podcast anyway.
Well, that's right. They're not.
Because, well, no, but when you think about it, like this is, okay, this is so weird, Shell. Like your podcast, it is so niche and it is such a, it's a topic that you have to lean into by choice. We're like, this is money. It's broad. We cover everything. A lot of it is just me ranting or some entertainment. And it's like, yeah, I'll come for along for the ride and I'll learn how to invest or whatever. Your podcast, this podcast right here, someone's listening because they are intentional and they want to do better with their career.
Absolutely. It's like the high achievers, the people in the business who are like, how do I add more value? How do I like become a better leader? How do I be the type of team player that adds value? And I mean, that's the thing. And like, if you have that mindset, a growth mindset, I seriously think you can change careers. You can get unstuck. You can do so many different things because you're the type of person that's a grower.
So on top of that diagnosing the problem, I want you to try and do self-reflection as much as possible. Is there, so you might be feeling down or depressed or whatever, okay? That's a clinical you problem. I can't outsource my mental health issues to my employer to fix. That's a you problem. Are you getting a good night's sleep? Are you exercising? Are you being a responsible human? Because at the end of the day, when you go to your workplace, there's an exchange of here's money, do a job. And there is tolerance with that. Sometimes you overwork and the money stays the same. Sometimes you underwork and the money stays the same. But if for too long you underwork, the money won't stay the same. The money will stop, aka you're going to have to get another job. So I just want, when you are diagnosing the problem, walk into the mirror and just have a look there to make sure that if you do move jobs, the problem doesn't follow.
That's really good. And I think we all have to confront that. And it's a brutal kind of process to go, am I the problem?
I seriously remember when I was working at North City in the office, desk-based job, had to do like 5 statements of advice a week, financial plan documents. It was so hectic. And I look back now, it's like far out, ADHD, just not productive, just couldn't do it. And, you know, you can kind of skirt around it, but I couldn't stay in power planning long because I just couldn't output. But I was thinking, it's an awareness thing, I didn't know I had ADHD at the time, so that helps. But all this to say, like, diagnosing the problem, is it a you problem, an employer problem, a job problem? So, you, like you said, your strength isn't in that job, or career problem, the career isn't aligned with your values and core beliefs and strengths.
So let's move through the last couple of steps. You need to, so you've diagnosed the problem, you need to brainstorm as many solutions as possible. So if we think about design thinking, this is a really cool process that you can use, super practical. So Google design thinking after this episode. But if we think about it, like imagine the step one is divergent thinking. So it's like get as many ideas on the table, like no can'ts, no blocking, no, this sounds weird when I'm saying it out loud. No, cannot do this, no blocking the conversation. We get as many ideas onto the paper piece of paper as possible. And then we look at them and go, okay, cool. That's the first stage of design thinking. As many ideas on the table as possible. The second stage is convergence. So how do we narrow down what's right? So we've gone from get all the ideas, as many as possible, on the page, then we start to narrow them down. So we really start to, step three, narrow down and go, okay, let's get it to maybe 2-3 options. You can jump, I'd do some research on LinkedIn, like jump on LinkedIn, find different people who are doing things that interest you and look at their career background. Look at their, what is it that they've done? What are the opportunities they've pursued? How might that align with what I'm doing?
Okay, so hang on, narrow down your ideas. So I get what you're saying, but I'm just, because I'm always like practical, it goes to your personality. Like for me, this 5-step process, it's not going to be over 1 week.
No.
So what I would say is when you're narrowing down your ideas, can you do a brain dump and write down a whole heap of ideas? You've looked on LinkedIn, you've talked to other people and be like, all right, I've got 6 possible ideas, either different jobs, career paths or whatever. It could take some research to narrow down the ideas. It could be like, become a vet. It's like, well, probably not possible for whatever reason. I don't want to go back to uni, so got to scrub that off. I could be an assistant or something, whatever. But would you suggest in a practical way, if you've got your list of ideas, I wonder if you could do a viability type scale next to them of like, you might do, okay, number one, if I could have a magic wand and get one of these ideas today, which one would it be? And you pick that one there. Well, hey, that one there is what you want. You got to go for it. But can you also do a viability thing, or it's like, what are the chances of between, or the ease of 1 in 10 of it happening, and just rating it? So at least you're getting some data on the table. This is my most favorite to least favorite. And am I, okay, I think number two, it's not as desirable as number one, but it probably, the pathway might be easier. All that to say, just really work on these ideas, even if it takes 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, probably way longer than that potentially, because you might be going, okay, well, for me, I'm currently, let's take Gabby's example. She's a radiation therapist, so she's working in hospitals. She had this passion and desire for nutrition and like natural medicine, like that was something. So there's kind of a little bit of overlap. She'd worked in like medicine in as a field, and then she was like wanting to pursue natural medicine. She then went and like did heaps of her own research, but she also talked to people in that industry. So it's like you do your desktop research just like you would go back to your uni days, but also have conversations with people, because it kind of gets to our next point, Glenn, which is the next step, step four, getting a job preview. And I like to think of this as like, if you go to the movies and you sit and you listen to the trailers, like, you know, the previews beforehand, and you get this little snapshot into all the movies that are coming up. Like, I always love the trailers. Like, I remember the trailer, Glenn, do you remember watching the trailer to The Dark Knight Rises?
Oh, yeah.
That was seriously the best movie trailer of all time. I will go on record saying that.
Mm.
And like, as soon as you see it, I'm like, sign me up. When the heck does that come out? And like, I remember sitting in that trailer being like, holy crap, this is so good. And for you, like, you want to get a preview into what the job's going to be like. So that might be volunteering with people. That might, and like, I know people talk about volunteering and be like, you should never do anything you don't get paid for. And I'm like, I just think, you know what? All the pain that might cause you, because if you go and like volunteer at a business to see what it's like to be a digital marketing specialist and you realize, oh, this is not for me, you've saved yourself a world of pain. So like, I don't agree with all these people saying don't ever do anything for free, because I just reckon that's a load of, like, just get a preview is what I'm saying. Like, get an insight, because you're going to save yourself stacks of money. And you also get to peek behind the curtain and see what that job's really like. Find ways to do that. It's take people out for coffee. Go and like shout someone a really nice lunch and say, hey, I'd love to pick your brain on this thing. But make it value add for them. If you want to get input from people who are doing the thing that you might think is interesting, you also need to make it a value add for them. Like we said, don't be a taker.
Totally. So what's the fifth and final step, Your Majesty?
Well, so the fifth and final step, I'll go back to my own like story to kind of round this out. Like, I was like umming and ahhing for ages about starting my own business, which was the big career change for me. And I did lots of like all this stuff, right? Of like really thinking through all the options that I had, narrowing down, getting input, talking to heaps of business owners. Glenn, how many times did I have talked to you about a bazillion to get your input on starting a business? Worked out all the risks and went, you know what? Okay, I just actually need to make a decision. I'm not going to make a decision out of fear. I'm going to back myself, go all in. So at some point you have to take the plunge when it comes to a career change. But I think for me, the biggest alleviation of stress was going, what is my scenario planning? Like, what happens if this doesn't work? And I remember thinking, if this doesn't work, I have 4 different options that I can pursue that are all really good options. So like, I want you to know, if you take the plunge and you go and go back to uni or go and do a thing and you realize, you know what? Maybe this wasn't the right call. It's not that win or loss mindset. It's a learning mindset, and you will be able to make your next move. Like, you don't have to nail it in one go. Like, you've had 4 career changes, Glenn, and each time you get better.
Yeah, and I think I've got to the point. So at the end of last year, I had a bit of a crisis, and I really did learn about myself again, where it was the crisis of boredom. And, you know, if you're a listener to This Is Money, you would have heard at the end of last year on a Thursday, I had some different hosts hosting shows, and I was a little bit over it, to be honest. I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I'm sick of it. It's like, oh, but I've created this thing and it needs me and blah, blah, blah. So, and I got through it. But my learning in that was, you know, don't throw away something good just if you're bored. Just don't react, because that's another thing. It's like, I'm bored with what I'm doing. Okay, well, don't react. Give it time. So it really was a period of 6 months for me. But one maybe final thing we can talk about would be, we always say it's good to get input and take people with you. I reckon one of the most healthy things you can do, if the environment allows it, is to actually talk big picture about your career with your manager, leader, or boss. Because any genuine person would want most, if not everyone, to flourish. All right. The slow driver on the M1 today, I don't want them to flourish. I want them to get out of the way. But, you know,
aside from them,
you know, and this comes back to, if you're working for a nut job who doesn't value people, well, don't waste your breath anyway. Like, you got to get out of there. But if you're in a good environment, and I'll share like an example, and I've asked for permission to share this. I had a really good chat with Rach on my team just last week about her own career goals. And it was just such a great exchange for me, and Rach appreciated it. And this is a boss talking to their staff member about potentially working in another career, not this business. And this is like, if you are not secure in who you are as a boss, that's quite a threatening conversation. But I've learned as an employer of people, as much as this isn't a prison, people can leave at any time, it's also, I don't own people, and they're not trapped here because I own them. And I just want anyone who comes in contact with me to leave better trained, more experienced, onto the next thing. So in that scenario, so Rach and I started to have it was a brief exchange via text on Slack, and I'm like, hang on, this needs to be a phone call just so nothing's missed. And we jumped on Google Meets or face to face, and we just really good, honest chat. And I told her about my plans for her role in the future in the business. And, she's also wants to protect her career. Like, what if This Is Money isn't around next week? What if I died, for example? Might happen. I've seen what I eat. There has to be that sense of almost your own career backup plan or redundancy, or even just the winning part was it, for Rach, she goes back to that. She's not a taker. She's a giver.
Mm.
She's being active with her thoughts. Like, a career is an alive thing. You're living in your career and it needs to be nurtured, looked after. It needs maintenance. It needs a good service. So it needs rest. Like, don't get worked out and burn out. So a lot of you treat your flipping car engines better than you treat your own career and, you know, service your career. Do a health check on your career. So all that to say, if someone is in an environment, Shell, where they're like, oh, that's so cool, Rach got to chat to Glenn about her own career, like saying that out loud, an employee talking to their boss about, I probably won't be working for you forever, that's confronting for a boss, because it's like, well, I don't want to lose. And I don't want to lose people. But just like Rach needs her own career redundancies and plan, my business needs its own redundancies and plans. We had a staff member who had to take some time off recently, out of the blue. But how I'm setting up my business is that more than one person know how to do each job. So the business isn't held ransom by one particular person who knows or who has the keys to the lockbox. Like, there's a couple of keys floating around. So all that to say, if someone's thinking about, well, I want to talk to my boss about this, but I've never had these discussions before, what do you say to them?
I think you've just got to open the conversation. And I would start, I think there's a few things in the mix. And for people listening who are like, if I was to raise with my boss that longer term, I want a career change and want out of this business, you want to have a healthy level of trust to do that, right? So there has to be like psychological safety. There has to be that kind of trust, because not every boss is going to respond in that way and be like, yeah, cool, let me help you wherever you want to go long term, all good. Because some bosses do have a fragile ego and they're like, as soon as you suggest, oh, maybe long term I'm not going to be here, they're like, well, I'm writing you off the list. Now, hopefully your boss isn't like that. I think like most people who are decent humans wouldn't be like that, but there are those out there, we know that. So first gauge if you've got the trust, and then I would just phrase it to go, hey, like, my long-term goals are this, my strengths are this, is there an opportunity to use them more here? And then like see what they say, but like start the conversation. You don't have to have it in one go. Like, I think where people go wrong with this stuff is they feel like they have to land it in one conversation. It's like, no, just start the conversation. Like, just start talking about your career if you haven't already. If you are at the point like you're sharing with Rach's example where she's thinking, oh, longer term, I think I might want to get out of podcast production and into, you know, finance as an industry and into like, I don't know, accounting or mortgage broking or whatever. What you do is like, you have that, but you give them a time horizon, because I don't want you to freak anyone out. So good.
And yeah, I did want to add, like, we had the discussion and we agreed that this isn't happening in the next 10 minutes. It's more of a years thing. Like,
and it's a healthy conversation.
Yeah. And it goes back to like, I know somebody who lost a staff member out of the blue, email, resigned over email, long-term employee, no phone. Like, it speaks more to the employee about the way they respond.
You have to do it with any of these things, Glenn, the high stakes conversations, high stakes decisions. As an employee, we need to think, how do I make this a win for both people?
Because in that situation where someone left a business, like literally overnight, they were a key team member, surprise, I'm out of here and I'm doing it via email, I'm not talking to you. They can never, ever, ever write to that business for a reference. Like,
no.
It is done. And the industry is a small place, you know what I mean? And it's just, you've got to actually, and I'm not saying this is easy, but I'm saying people move on. You've just got to do the best that you can under the circumstances. You talked about in episode on This Is Work 614, last week's episode. It was really great. At the end of that episode, because I listen, Shell, I like
Thanks.
To check up on you. Well, I listen to Shell's podcast just to reverse engineer stuff. So when she's like, finding out if you've got a toxic workplace, it does this, this, and this, and it's toxic. I'm like, all right, just got to do the opposite of that, and I'll be sweet. How do you know if your boss is a narcissist? All right, I'll just do the opposite of that. Like, so I kind of reverse engineer, but you talk to us about this framing thing and when you need to have hard conversations, and it could be a, hey, boss, I want to talk to my boss about my next 2 years career. I want to be able to ask them if I can take them on the journey. How can you set up that if you are a bit nervous, anxious, shy, scared?
Framing seems helpful for this. So, Glenn, you're my boss and I'm going to have this conversation with you. Here's how I'd frame it. Hey, Glenn,
Before you do that, I'm the boss. I'm just pretending I'm on my phone. Yeah, what's up, Michelle? You want to have a chat, do you?
You can't tell people my name is Michelle, first of all, and can you please get off your phone?
Yeah, so talk to us about getting their attention as well.
Okay, so I would do this in a regular one-on-one meeting. If you don't have regular scheduled one-on-one meetings, you need to book one in. So I would email my boss and say, hey, I'd love to have a catch-up, maybe a coffee with you if you're in person, or can we schedule a Zoom meeting? So that's what you do first of all. And then when I'm in the conversation, I say, hey, I want to talk to you about my career, and I'd love to have a conversation. Before we get into it, though, I just want to let you know how much I care about my work here and the job that I'm doing. I really enjoy our working relationship, and I want to make sure that I consistently deliver great outcomes for the business and for you, Glenn. I'm also having this kind of thought process. This is not like solid. These are raw thoughts, but I've just been thinking longer term what I want to do. And while I love what I'm doing with this podcast, I'm wondering if it aligns with my strengths. And long term, I've been thinking maybe of pursuing something in a different area. But I want to get your input into it. And I want to get your advice. And so being able to kind of just talk about how do I get your advice? How do I get your input? And I'm really committed in the same kind of sentence is framing it up. Now, that's not flawless because I'm doing it on the spot. I would actually plan and write this out beforehand and think about how do I want this message to land well for Glenn, knowing his personality, knowing his things that like will help him to receive that message. So whatever you do, write down your thoughts and read it through the lens of what is going to work for the audience, what is going to work for my manager based on what I know of them.
And remember in that last episode, you talked about labeling the emotions like, hey, I'm feeling a bit nervous and
uncomfortable. I'm feeling
so
nervous to
me.
Bring this up.
When you were saying that role play, you saw there was a bit of a smile on my face.
Yeah.
I was about to be funny and say something.
What were you about to say?
I was going
to
be like, oh, so what? You want to resign? What? Oh, glad you brought that up because we're actually making some changes and it just works well if you're out of here in the next couple of months.
And actually, I would say how I framed that, I wouldn't actually do that. So I'd tweak it a little bit. I think what you said is better. Like, I'm really nervous to talk about this, but it's really important that we have a good relationship and I want to be honest with you. And so I want to talk to you about my long-term career goals. Are you okay if we have that conversation? That's how I'd phrase it.
Yeah, there you go, everyone. Well, we'll recap the 5 tips if you are navigating a career crisis. Step 1, take time to diagnose the problem. And for those reading and playing at home, page 344 of the This Is Career. What's the book called? Sort Your Career Out. Step 2, brainstorm as many solutions you can. Step 3, I want you to then narrow down those. Step 4, go and get a bit of a preview. Talk to as many people in the field. Go and, you know, if you're like me and want a job on the tugboats, go and hijack a tugboat. Take the plunge. Step 5. You just got to do it.
Yeah. And remember, there's no wins or losses. It's all learning. So thanks, Glenn, for coming on the podcast. And to all of our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, give us a 5-star rating and review. Love you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glenn James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.